We've all heard it before. It's who you know. Now hear why it's so true. Welcome to Social Capital, a weekly podcast where we dive into social relationships and how the investment you put into them establishes trust, reciprocity, and value within your network and community. Your host, Lori Hybe, will connect with top professionals and dive into their best networking stories and techniques to share with you.
Hey everybody, Lori Hybe here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at LJ Hybe and Facebook at Social Capital with Lori Hybe. All links mentioned in the show will be found in the show notes. This week's guest is Mary Brophy. Mary is principal of Lyft Reputation Advisors, a PR firm focused on advancing and protecting business reputation. Prior to starting her own consulting firm, she held leadership positions at Kramer Krasselt and Jacobson Rost in Milwaukee and Edelman Worldwide in Chicago. Most business leaders believe their reputation is their most important asset. Lyft Reputation Advisors helps small and mid-sized businesses build trust and a positive reputation with their customers and other key audiences to drive financial performance. Mary, thanks for being on the show today.
I'm excited to be here.
Me as well. We're going to have a great conversation, and I love that our worlds are somewhat intertwined. I know you've got the PR background, and marketing and PR kind of cross paths, so this is going to be a good conversation today.
Definitely.
That being said, I'm going to start with, how has the role of PR evolved in the digital age?
Well, it's expanded a great deal. It's been interesting because throughout my career, I've worked primarily at agencies that were what I'll call marketing-centric. When I was at Edelman, they really took an approach that was PR-centric. And the bottom line is we're really all about building the brand, whether it's your company brand or a product brand. PR can be a great tool to amplify your message. But beyond that, I really think that PR is the strategy, if you will, that really has the most value or brings the most value to the table in terms of building your reputation. I mean, that's really at the core and at the heart of it. That's what public relation is meant to do, is to really create that depth of understanding with your audience. And in the digital age, you know, that certainly has been greatly expanded through social media. We hear a lot about paid, earned, and owned media in the marketing world. And in PR, we tend to be in charge of that earned media aspect, which can carry a lot more credibility with it. And then both, you know, marketing and PR folks really dabble in the owned area. There's a lot of overlap there. And, you know, that gives you the ability, maybe perhaps, to control your message a little bit more effectively. But it just is a greater expansion of the channels and tools at your disposal to help build your brand and your reputation.
Yeah, that's a really good definition as far as how it's been integrated in the digital age. I love how you broke it down into the paid, earned, and owned media. And really that earned is the publications that were, you know, previously, well, printed. I mean, some are still today, but a lot have shifted to online. So it's that same philosophy. It's that the earned media just in that digital space.
Yes, and I think we hear a lot about fake news, and we all see sponsored content in the various channels that we're on. And even when we're on social media, we'll get an ad prompted, if you will, or something in your newsfeed from Facebook or in LinkedIn. You know, that probably is going to be coming down the pike as well. Mm-hmm. So I think for the average consumer or the average business customer, it can become very challenging to try to figure out, well, what really is earned and what truly is owned or sponsored. That line is getting increasingly blurred. And I read recently that Facebook is launching an initiative with journalists and really trying to educate their audience, if you will, or their users a bit more about really how to tell what a real true news story consists of, because not everyone, especially I think, I'm looking at my daughter as an example, she's 17, and she really doesn't watch traditional news outlets. So, you know, being able to take a step back and understand, you know, is this really a news story or is it an opinion piece or what exactly is it? Facebook is really trying to bring that back full circle for its users so that they have the tools, if you will, to be able to recognize that in the content that they're getting.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's really important for everyone to be educated on, especially as less and less individuals are going using traditional mediums, TV and news, newsprint, I would say, to gather their information. It's all just that instant gratification of what's most recent in their feed, which
exactly
isn't always. So that I can see how that's totally a PR challenge, actually, because someone could definitely write some negative news about an individual or a company and just assume, you know, others would just assume that it's accurate information.
And they and unfortunately with social media, those kinds of stories can quickly go viral or you know, be spread throughout the Twitter sphere or whatever it might be. And it might be later on, maybe a day or two later. I mean, even looking at some of the recent headlines and what's been happening, you know, with Donald Trump and with Russia, BuzzFeed has been catching a lot of flack for putting out the information about the dossier on Trump when a lot of that information is unsubstantiated. And I don't want to get into a political discussion, but, you know, if you can strip away all the politics, you know, in the past, I don't think that any traditional news source would publish information like that without being able to verify the accuracy. And CNN, you know, went ahead and picked up on that and published the information about the dossier and what had been included in it. And, you know, is that really the role of a traditional news source or even for an outlet like BuzzFeed, which may not be a traditional journalism outlet or editorial outlet or publisher, but, you know, again, those are the questions that are being raised today as we're all trying to sort through our news sources and make sense of the world.
Yeah, wow. I'm excited for the rest of this conversation that we're going to have here because you definitely got some really good insight to offer. That being said, how can businesses do a better job of building their reputations with customers and prospects?
I think the first thing that's the most important is really to take a step back and decide what you stand for. And, you know, we talk a lot about brand and really defining our brand, and that certainly is a key part of it. But I think the small businesses in particular, there tends to be an immediate focus on the product or the service they're offering without really doing that evaluation to really determine, you know, what their passion is, why they're in business, what is it that really drives them. And then, you know, building on that in the public relations world, community relations, especially for a local small business, is incredibly important. And, you know, you really want to pursue activities and interests that really are aligned with your work and what it is that you do. I think that's a lot more effective to help build your brand than simply picking four or five charities to support and, you know, donating money or, you know, providing volunteers. That creates a lot of fragmentation. And you'll be a lot more effective if you pick something that really supports your business and what you're doing. And I can give you an example of that. A former client of mine, Boss Snowplow, great brand. Their products are made in northern Michigan. Their plows are sold all over the world, frankly. We developed a PR program for them a few years ago when I was at Jacobson Rost called Snow Care for Troops, where they provided free snow removal for military families who were overseas. That was later expanded to veterans, and it was a natural fit for Boss. It really fits in with the product. It's a cause that people feel passionate about.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they utilize that to really rally, you know, snowplow professionals and the general public. We partnered with Project Evergreen, a nonprofit that had already had a program in place for lawn care in the summer. And it was a tremendously effective program. It really, really resonated with their audience, with the public at large. And eventually, actually, the White House recognized that program. We all know that Michelle Obama was a huge supporter of, you know, military families. And that program was recognized by the White House because of the great public service role that it played. So that just is one example of really finding that thread and what it is that your brand stands for, and then really carrying that through in the PR programs that you're taking out to the world.
Oh, that is a great story to share. Fantastic example. Really makes sense. And I'm sure all of our listeners appreciate that you shared that story. So thank you so much. In your line of business, I imagine every single day is very stressful. You're not only are you trying to, you know, brainstorm and think about these, you know, great stories that can turn into PR opportunities, but, you know, those negative issues that may arise as well. How do you relax and decompress after a long day?
Music would probably be my passion. My whole family, my daughter, my husband, and I, we have very eclectic tastes in music. Everything from, you know, alternative to, I like to listen to you know, some of the big band music, Benny Goodman and that type of thing from time to time. So just kind of getting lost in that music. You know, whether I'm taking the dog for a walk and throwing on, you know, the headphones or exercising in the basement, that's my way to kind of decompress and sort of lose myself in the lyrics.
Fantastic. All right, so we're going to move into some questions about networking here. Can you share with me your most successful or favorite networking story that you've had?
It's hard to single out a single networking story, but I guess what I've found in general, the networking that has had the greatest value for me over my career really goes back to those really strong connections, relationships that you develop one-on-one. Whether you find those people at a networking event, or whether you develop them one-on-one through your relationships with coworkers and colleagues. I'm lucky that I have probably three or four touchstones, if you will, now, who I always go back to for advice or for an opinion or to, you know, maybe collaborate or even brainstorm an idea. A lot of those folks are in the PR world, but I also, you know, have a lot of friends who are, you know, in marketing or video production, research, those kinds of things. So it's really trying to find those folks who share your values and you can develop that trusted relationship with, and then circling back to them again and again when you need that touchstone.
Sure. So this is a good transition then into the next question. It sounds like you have quite a large network that you tap into often. What do you do to stay in front of or nurture this network?
It really is a combination of face-to-face and personal networking, and of course today, social networking. You know, LinkedIn certainly is a fantastic tool to casually, if you will, or strategically nurture those relationships and keep in touch with folks and, you know, share your perspectives, opinions or views on different issues related to your area of business. Because I'm passionate about cause marketing, and then the other area is really crisis planning and crisis communications, a lot of what I share is reflected in those kinds of posts or articles that I'll share. But on the face-to-face side, it really is keeping in touch with your network and with those friends and colleagues through networking events and really coffees, lunches. You know, there's nothing new under the sun here, but, sure, you know, making sure that you're really keeping your network alive and keeping those relationships nurtured and fresh.
So what would be the frequency that you try to stay in touch with someone?
Well, for folks who are a little bit more far-flung, I have a mentor, Deb Livingstone, who actually was my mentor and boss at two agencies. She's now out in Denver, but I talk with her a few times a year. There are other folks here in the Milwaukee area that I try to get together with for coffee or lunch, more frequently if I can, but everyone is so busy. We all know how challenging that can be. But I do try to set up, those types of networking contacts and lunches and coffees and things several times each week.
Sure.
For me, the thing that can make your networking pay off for you the most and for the folks that you're networking with is curiosity. I'm a very curious person. I think most people are. I love learning new things. I love hearing new ideas. And that's really what drives me with my networking. And I think it's what really can help make it the most beneficial if you approach it with that idea in mind and really look to find out what's new with that other person, not just in their business, but in their personal life, you'll find that you'll have very rewarding relationships.
Yeah, I agree with that. Diving deeper into, when someone says, what have you been up to? Oh, I've been busy. Well, personally, I hate that word and I use it and I really am don't like that. I'm trying to find a better way to say, really what's going on.
Right.
Without just saying, oh, I've been busy. Not only to just spike curiosity in someone else and get that conversation going, but, I think it's important to just really have that genuine conversation as opposed to, I've just got a lot going on. You wouldn't understand. I feel like that's what busy says. So, it goes both ways too,
just exactly. And it's easy to fall into, if you have an agenda, and to fall into that trap of, you always hear about folks who don't listen so much as they're waiting for their turn to speak. And we've all fallen into that trap, myself included. I think it's important to break away from that and really almost play the role of a reporter, if you will, or a journalist to really try to, dig a little deeper and find out a little bit more about what's going on.
Yeah. Fantastic. That is really good advice. That being said, what advice would you offer to the business professional who's looking to grow their network?
Well, I think LinkedIn is a great tool for that. In addition to, whether it's through Meetup or Event, some of these other sites where they talk, they share information about all the local networking events. That's something I really started diving into more in 2017. I was part of a small networking group last year that a colleague I'm collaborating with had started. So that's kind of a new avenue that I'm, pursuing and seeing where that leads and hopefully that'll be mutually beneficial. The other thing that I think is really helpful and in a more meaningful way is to network and get involved through local charity work. Working at marketing and advertising agencies and PR firms, you work really hard. You work a lot of long hours. It's not a 9-to-5 type of job, so it can be challenging to find time to do that. Something I always found. And now that I'm my own boss, my schedule is much more flexible. So over last year, I've gotten involved with the Habitat for Humanity Ozaukee County affiliate and joined the board. And now I'm kind of branching out and getting more involved in some of the charity work in Ozaukee County. And it's been incredibly rewarding. Habitat does phenomenal work. You meet a lot of really passionate, committed folks. And you're doing something good that's giving back to the community that you live in, and that's very rewarding.
I think that is fantastic, getting involved with a local charity, because you said a couple of buzzwords that really resonated with me there. One being that it's rewarding. So it's that, personal enrichment and rewarding that you're doing something really good. And two, if it's something that you're passionate about, and typically those that are giving their time are going to be passionate about that specific topic. So it's probably easier to connect with someone and build that relationship.
Absolutely.
Because you have that common ground of, you have this vested interest and you're donating your time and or services, specific because of that common ground, which is passion. So very good advice. Thank you for sharing that. Moving on to the next question here. So you've alluded a little bit to, you know, LinkedIn and social media, and kind of crossed with regard to, like, you know, getting together in person, the one-on-ones, the meetups. I'm curious, where do you find more value? Is it digital networking or traditional networking?
Well, I sound old school, but traditional networking, I think, does have the greatest value. You know, LinkedIn can, you know, help you nurture those relationships, or maybe find somebody to connect with where you have something in common that you would not have found otherwise. You know, talking about, most of our personal professional relationships we develop through our work. So you have your work colleagues, and they might move on to another company, or that, you know, in public relations, we have the Public Relations Society of America, you know, there's the American Marketing Association. You know, you can meet new colleagues through those types of professional networks, but it really is limited to your, you know, those tactile connections that you make when you're out and about at those types of activities or the companies that you work with. On the social side, you could really go way beyond that and connect with people in your chosen profession, or if you have a new area of passion and interest, you can expand your network into other avenues, especially through the groups that are there on LinkedIn. One of the areas that I became passionate about, cybersecurity, in the last couple of years, that was after doing a project, putting together a crisis response plan for a local community bank. And I realized what an important issue that is for a lot of businesses, small and medium-sized businesses as well. And I have a lot of background in crisis communication, so I thought, well, that seems to be a good intersection of my skills and that particular need. So much of what I've been trying to nurture in terms of getting into new areas of expertise, if you will, or connecting with new people, I've really tried to connect with a lot more IT professionals and people in the legal field who are involved in that, or insurance, or business insurance. And so social networks like LinkedIn have been very helpful in helping me find those folks and share ideas and collaborate and maybe delve a little bit deeper into that area of cybersecurity.
So I'm curious then, with that being said, your traditional networking really being either going to an event or just kind of doing that face-to-face on some level, some degree. Digital, you're using LinkedIn or some of the other social medias to find kind of specific expertise that you're looking to partner with or gather some information. But it seems then, and an assumption I'm making, you're using digital to move into traditional, so you can hopefully get that face-to-face with someone. But you mentioned LinkedIn is a great way to nurture your network, so you've established that initial contact traditionally, and you're using digital as a nurturing tool. So you're going both, you know,
exactly.
Kind of, they're crossing.
Yeah, it's symbiotic.
They're intersecting. Yeah,
absolutely, it is.
That's really a great illustration, actually, of how it works both ways. Fantastic. All right, so some fun questions here. If you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell yourself to do more of, less of, or differently with regards to your professional career?
I think my primary piece of advice would be to be fearless. You know, when you're starting out fresh in your career, typically you're coming straight out of college. Maybe you've done a few internships, but the whole business world and how to act and how to behave and all those kinds of things, you know, that's all new to you. And it's easy to spend a lot of time focusing on, you know, always trying to do the right thing, or, you know, worrying about, well, what does my boss think of me? What do my peers think of me? And the reality is, if you have the right moral compass and the right set of values in terms of how you're guiding your decisions in your career, that frees you up to be more fearless and really let that be your guide versus what those external opinions tell you you should do. That would be the most valuable lesson I've learned over the years, because regardless, if you let those fears can stop you and keep you from either doing the right thing or maybe the right thing for you at any given point in your career, and fear might stop you from taking that next step. And, you know, you can worry a lot about the worst thing that could happen to you. Will I lose my job? We lose that big account, and then I'll lose my job. And, you know, once the worst thing happens to you, if it happens to you, it's very freeing, because you learn, well, I survived that, and I landed on my feet, and maybe I landed in a better place. Mm-hmm. So don't let the fear of what might happen stop you from doing what you love the best.
I love that. Don't let the fear of what might happen stop you from doing what you love or what you want to do. That's fantastic. Yeah, that it's hard as a 20-year-old though, or in the shoes.
Hard as a 30 or 40-year-old.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do agree with that. But it's great advice. So if there's any you know, college students listening, I would definitely follow those words of advice. Definitely be fearless and you know, take that step, no matter how much your inner critic is saying don't do it. If you really want to do it. Okay, so we've all heard of the 6 degrees of separation. Now, who would be the one person you'd love to connect with, and do you think you could do it within the sixth degree?
The and this probably is going to sound sad, probably the one person I'd like to connect with, sadly, has passed away. And you know, that's the strange thing about LinkedIn is, you know, you will have connections that will stay there on LinkedIn, even though, you know, those folks might be gone. One of my best friends and mentors, Gary Dunlap, he was the first supervisor I had who, he had a very interesting style. He had a great sense of humor. He knew how to, he's like that dad who knows when to, you know, when he needs to have you toe the line, you know, in one situation, but then, you know, crack a beer with you and throw his arm around you and say, hey, it's going to be okay.
Sure.
In the next situation. And Gary was very much like that. And, you know, because of that, and because he was so compassionate in his leadership and mentorship, he developed, friends and folks who really respected him throughout his career, and he sadly passed away of lung cancer a few years ago. But he's somebody I'd like to be able to go back and connect with, and I don't know, have a conversation about life now.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, thank you for sharing that. What is interesting is that, you know, like you mentioned, his LinkedIn profile is still on there.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see that on Facebook as mm-hmm. well. And there's definitely policies that are written as far as how to preserve, you know, what you want to do. So you can, you know, you can kind of let these social media sites know, you know, what you want your profile, what you want to happen to your social identities after you've passed.
Well, and I think the main reason it happens is because they make it so difficult to get in touch with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Facebook and even PayPal, you know, there's not a phone, you can't call and talk to a real person.
Uh-huh.
It's, you know, an online conversation, and a lot can get lost in translation.
Yep.
I mean, I just went through that recently with our PayPal account for Habitat, trying to get certain things straightened out.
Yep.
And I think that's driven by the whole, you know, privacy issue and the security issue. You know, mm-hmm. they want to make sure that, you know, that data is safe, but because they don't create an easier avenue to get in touch with somebody with a phone call, it becomes much harder, and people give up or people don't bother. So you have a lot of sites out there that never have been taken down, or accounts. I'm sure PayPal is the same situation.
Oh, I'm sure.
And those can get, you know, hijacked by somebody who, you know, has nefarious intentions. And so then that's counterproductive, mm-hmm. you know, to the whole reason that PayPal and others are doing that. So a lot of that probably needs to be rethought. But I'm sure the new administration will take care of that, right?
Yes. Yeah, that was an interesting rabbit hole we just went down as far as that discussion went. But it is a really interesting topic. And I think there's going to be there's definitely further exploration that needs to be had on that. And I may turn that into somewhat of a solo cast in the future. And just
excuse me, there are a number of news feeds and e-newsletters that I subscribe to that I get in my inbox every day. And there's just something new happening every day. And it's constantly changing. And, you know, I think for the average person and for the average small business owner, trying to keep up with that and figure out, well, what exactly is it I should be doing, can be very challenging. So, mm-hmm. You know, hopefully there will be greater clarity for that, in the coming year. And, you know, again, that's something I think that if you can find the right, you know, IT professional who's keeping up with things, you know, you'll be in good shape. And then if you can, you know, make sure that you have a communications plan ready, should you be hacked, then you won't be scrambling at the last second trying to deal with that situation should you be faced with it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So I'm curious, what book are you reading right now?
Well, I have a bad habit of starting lots of books and then never finishing them. So,
join the club.
I tend to be, you know, I guess a browser, if you will. But there is one book that I had just started. Actually, my daughter had wanted to get Wuthering Heights for Christmas, and I was able to find a copy of that for her at a used bookstore. You know, those kinds of books, it's kind of hard to, you can't find any, there aren't really too many bookstores anymore, are there? I'm sure you could probably find them online pretty easily, but, you know, she wanted to have the hard copy. Everything else is digital for her, but books she still likes to have in paper. So so that's something I'm starting to read as well.
Okay.
But I never read that.
Yeah.
Some of the classics are good to go back and
I've thought about it. I haven't really dove into that. I'm just more focused on that. I call them the self-help books always.
Yeah, yeah.
But it would be nice to sit down and pick up a classic novel. You know, I think if I were to do that, I'd probably pick up like some Sherlock or some Mark Twain books or something. You know, just some of those really good old classics. All right. So any final word or advice to offer our listeners with regards to growing and supporting your network?
I think it's really, you just need to be consistent with it and keep at it. And it's really easy, especially if you're really busy at work, to sort of let that slide and not continue to nurture those relationships. I've been guilty of that myself. You don't want to do that. On the flip side, if you have found that you've done that, because I you know, when I was in my last job, there was a period where I wasn't being as active with my networking. I really was surprised at how welcoming, when I did pick up and reconnect with some folks that I hadn't connected with in years, how welcoming and glad they were to hear from me, and vice versa. I know that there are folks who've reached out to me that I haven't talked with in a while. And, you know, if you have a solid relationship with somebody and you have that mutual trust and respect, which is really what networking relationships are all about, you can go back in and pick up the ball from there.
Yeah, that's great. Just to reiterate, it's just really to be consistent and keep at it. And I really like that statement that you said at the end there with regards to that mutual trust and respect, and how regardless of time, as long as that trust and respect is there, that relationship is pretty solid.
Absolutely. And, you know, we probably evolved, not to end on a negative note, but we've all had experiences with so-called frenemies.
Mm-hmm.
you know, somebody who acts like your friend and acts like a supporter, and then lo and behold, you find out they've been stabbing you in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, there are people in the business world like that. So, you know, that certainly is a sure path to ruin your relationships and your contacts. Word gets around, and, you know, that can ruin your career. On the flip side of that, again, if you don't do that, if you try to be as giving, you know, with your network as you would like to get, then you'll find that that all comes back to you twofold.
That's really good advice as well. Be as giving with your network as you'd like to get, because it will come back twofold, or even, you know, three or fourfold. Really.
Absolutely.
All right. So if anyone is interested in getting in contact with you, what's the best way they can reach you?
The best way would be through my work email, which is mary@liftreputation.com. They can also call my cell phone, which is 414-429-6180.
Right. And we will include that information in the show notes. Thank you so much, Mary, for our conversation today. This was fantastic.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you, Lori.
All right. This wraps up our episode of Social Capital. A huge thank you to Mary Brophy for taking the time to connect with us. Join us next week for another great guest as we continue the conversation on networking and building your community. If you need me, send an email to lori@socialcapitalpodcast.com. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
That's all for this episode of the Social Capital Podcast. Be sure to visit socialcapitalpodcast.com for show notes, more episodes, and to check out our free ebooks on business and networking.